As an adapting listener, you won't want to miss the Jewish Education Project's spring event on Tuesday, May 21st in New York City. Join us for an inspiring conversation on the role of education in strengthening Jewish identity, fortitude, and the Jewish future with film and stage actor and podcast host Josh Molina. You can register via the link in the show notes. Hi, everybody. This is Adapting, and we're recording today on May 3rd, 2024, with an episode about education and technology, a bit of a break from our regular series, which has been taking place around Israel in a post-October 7th world. And I wanted to focus on this issue because it's so pervasive and there are so many discussions taking place, but in particular, focusing on the conversation with David about how we integrate, not even integrate, how we really double down on technology in our Jewish educational spaces. Not as an elective, not as an add-on, not as a supplement to what we're doing, but in the recognition that if we are in the business of preparing our young people for the worlds in which they live and the worlds in which they're going to inhabit and work in, that technology and technology education needs to be part and parcel of their Jewish education and not separate to it. David also tackles some of the more controversial issues and also some of the more exploratory issues about the roles of AI and robotics. It's a really fascinating conversation, which I'm sure all of us will get a lot of insights into and perhaps also have a lot of questions and maybe also some concerns about the role in which technology plays in Jewish education now and moving forward. This is Adapting, the Future of Jewish Education, a podcast from the Jewish Education Project, where we explore the big questions, challenges, and successes that define Jewish education. I'm David Breifman. David Merrill is the founder and CEO of ThinkBright LLC, a national voiceover IP telephone company. So you might ask, why on earth are we interviewing David here on Adapting today? Well, he also has a passion for the intersection of education and technology and has recently been doing a whole lot of work for some local Jewish institutions, including teaching STEM courses at Westchester Hebrew High School. And today, when I wanted to have a conversation about the integration of technology in Jewish education, I could think of no one better than to ask David to be a guest on Adapting today. So welcome, David, to Adapting.
Thank you for having me, David.
So tell us all how you got into Jewish education. And from there, we'll go into exactly what it is that you're doing. But what got you involved in Jewish education?
Yeah, so it was definitely an unexpected circumstance. I had a pretty bad accident a couple of years back, fell off a ladder and underwent about 3 surgeries. And during that time period, I was really kind of removed from my day-to-day operations at my phone company. So I had to really kind of take a step back and recover. During this time frame, completely bored. I was like losing my mind, trying to find something to do. And it happens that a family friend tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, you know, I'm a board member of this school, a local Jewish school, and they're moving and they need help setting up a network. And the quotes that they got were astronomical. And I looked at it. I said, yeah, that's crazy. I can help you with this. No problem. And I volunteered. I said, here, just buy this equipment. I'll install it. And you'll go from, you know, paying what might have been $30,000 to $2,000. And you'll get a top-notch system. And so that's what I did. I got involved that way by volunteering in some of the IT needs. And then from there, it kind of snowballed into other things.
Well, you didn't just volunteer. Someone knew you as the owner and the person in charge of this, you know, cutting-edge voiceover IP telephone company, saw that you had a bit of time on your hands and said, David, why don't you get involved? So you get involved, you help a school set up its hardware, I guess, if you like, or the system to enable it to take place. And then once you're inside the school, you begin to see a whole lot of other things where you begin to apply some of your other knowledge and say, hang on a second, this is not just what technology is at the moment. Here's what it could be. Am I getting that part of the story right as well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, you come in and first of all, it was very rewarding to be able to be in an educational environment. It was very different from what I was used to in corporate America. I felt it so much more rewarding to be able to help schools, help kids, and you know, realize their full potential. And I had an opportunity to do that. And so I could totally understand why people go into this space because it is extremely rewarding. And many would say it's even more rewarding than what you would normally see in corporate America. And so I really just fell in love with it. And that's when other ideas came out. And I said, hey, wouldn't it be cool if we did a makerspace? And, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we started doing some like vocational classes, which is like, you know, I could teach them like networking and computer assembly and then 3D printing and coding. And so it just kind of like exploded from that point on. And the school that I was volunteering at that time, which was Westchester Torah Academy, they were actually very open, very receptive, which is something very refreshing because you don't always have that where schools are very open and very receptive. They were, and they really kind of gave me a blank canvas to work on.
So I want to go through and explore a whole lot of the things you just spoke about, but in some ways I also want to cut to the chase and announce to the audience, you just won a robotics competition at Westchester Hebrew High School with a team that you were coaching. So tell us a bit about robotics in this competition.
Oh, it was very cool. So SIJE, which is...
The Center for Initiatives in Jewish Education.
Yes. And they basically run a VEX competition program that all the schools in the area and even beyond the local area come to and compete. Westchester Hebrew High School has never been in the competition. They've been operating, I think, for about 10 years. And one of my students mentioned their interest in it. And I said, you know what? If you're interested, I'm interested. Let's do it. So I called them up. I said, let's register. We want to join. We joined and we entered into the competition. We crunched down. We planned. We went to the competition and we came out the first time out of the gate. We won first place. And so it was very exciting. The kids did amazing and I was very, very proud of them.
All right. Just really for me, well, let's say for the audience, yeah, and for me, what does a robot look like in a school robotics competition?
Think of it like brackets, a lot of metal brackets, gears, motors, and wheels, and then you have pistons. And basically, it just looks like a lot of steel put together with screws and bolts, and the same way that you would build any kind of robot today. It's not like... And then that's at the high school level. On the lower grades, they do more plastic components, but same idea. The mechanism is there.
Why I'm asking you about this question is sort of like, I don't want this to sound pejorative, but what you just described, metal and levers and gears and all that sort of stuff, is not typically what you associate with a Jewish day school. The product of a Jewish day school is not to produce levers and gears and robots and all this sort of stuff. So I'm really fascinated as to how you have made this work so ingrained in the work you're doing. Talk a bit about maker spaces and robotics and how it has become integrated in the schools that you've worked with. And I think increasingly more so why it's becoming important for Jewish schools also to be doing this type of work.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, let's not forget, our Jewish schools, we're still meant to meet the kids on an educational level that is similar or ideally better than what their education would be throughout the country. We have to meet them there. But on top of that, we're layering Judaic studies. But we should not be layering that at the expense that kids are graduating without basic knowledge concepts that are applicable to what they're going to need to know when they join the workforce or just, you know, live their lives in the future. So, you know, maker spaces have become a big component now in a lot of schools because it does create an environment that allows students to really explore the worlds of technology and engineering. And, you know, your maker spaces should have machines for fabrication, whether they're 3D printers, whether they're CNC machines, whether they're lasing engraving machines. The idea is to create and to invent, but to also understand how things work. And the technology component is all that software that comes in, artificial intelligence, you know, coding, design, all these other components. And it's really all about preparing these kids for the jobs of tomorrow. But a makerspace is definitely, it's ideal to have. Do I think it's mandatory? I think any classroom could be turned into a makerspace from my experience, but every person should have an environment that lends itself to that kind of atmosphere of creation.
Is there anything particularly Jewish about the STEM work that you do in these schools?
So that's really up to the STEM educator, right? So what I do is, let's say students, they're at a younger age, they're learning about a mezuzah. So they'll learn from the teacher about what's a mezuzah, where do you have to place a mezuzah, you know, all the Judaic components of what makes up a mezuzah. Then they'll come, let's say, to the STEM class, and they'll go ahead and work on Tinkercad, which is a great three-dimensional design program, and they'll design a mezuzah, and then they'll 3D print their mezuzah. And then they can go to another class, which is art, and then they can decorate their mezuzah with acrylic markers and paint. So there is definitely a way to overlap Judaic into the STEM. And we've done that. We've done it with making Seder plates. We've done that with making yads for the Torah. I once made a Keter Torah, a huge Keter Torah. You can actually make a lot of things that intersect with Judaism. And it's really kind of great when you can bring in your colleagues from your educational environment, from other classes, and kind of work together and get them involved.
David, what was your own Jewish educational background?
I started off in SAR in Riverdale. We didn't have a high school at that point. So I went to Westchester Hebrew High School. And then I went to both GW and SUNY Binghamton. But yeah, yeshiva all the way to high school.
And your job was to get into, or your career ambitions were to be in the technology world.
Yes.
And a set of circumstances then helped you apply that technology expertise into the Jewish world.
Yeah.
All right. Why I ask those series of questions is because one of my perceptions about technology in the Jewish educational space is often that we see Jewish educators with all of the best intentions in the world try to bring in or to develop technology into their classrooms. And the students look at them and say, you know what, this is cute, or this is kind of interesting, but it's got nothing compared to the technology which I'm really used to in my everyday life, whether it's the video games or the AI stuff they're experiencing, or frankly, even the social media stuff, which we might prefer that they're not experiencing. But the quality of what we're often presenting is not at the level of which they're experiencing in the rest of their lives. Now, along comes you, whose expertise is the technology. Your passion might be the Jewish, but you're now beginning to apply the very best of the technological world that you know into the Jewish educational space. And for me, this is a really important paradigm shift in the way we look at technology, because it comes with a recognition that we can't just do technology for technology's sake. We have to be offering it at least at the level that's comparable to what these young people are experiencing in the rest of their lives. Otherwise, we'll always be seen as doing Jewish education as a second-rate enterprise rather than giving it the quality experience that it deserves. That's a bit of a rant, but let's hear your response to it.
No, I actually 100% agree with that. And I think that is a real problem. I mean, you hit it right on the head there. Like, one of the biggest problems that I feel schools encounter today, I definitely know that there are Jewish schools that are hiring engineers or are hiring people with computer science degrees. Now, remember, listen, you know, not everybody enters this space for the money. Certainly, they don't enter it for the money. I think being a teacher it's a rewarding experience. And there are people who genuinely want to go into this space and teach. The problem is, though, getting people from that sector, I think one of the hardest part is meeting salary requirements to get people with computer science degrees and engineering degrees. And I think what's even more challenging is that public schools do meet them on those salary requirements. I can't speak to every single municipality, but I know in the Westchester County area, we have teachers that are making upwards of $150,000 a year as a STEM teacher, you know, starting at around $90,000. And so, you know, getting people with that background. Now, it's always great when you get people who are at a certain point in their life where they feel like, you know what, I'm done with the corporate world. I kind of want to try something different. It's not about the money, but it's about giving back. Those are excellent ways. But are they still practicing? Are they, you know, the key is that they're not coming into the education space with dated ideas and dated stuff. And then, of course, there are teachers that genuinely do stay up to date. They are the exception, not the rule. But there are teachers who do push themselves to like stay on top of technology. And I think that is harder in Jewish education because we don't give credits for professional development the same way public school systems do. So there's no purpose for you to take a curriculum at Carnegie Mellon for robotics that will give you credit towards your PD work because that's how they work in the public school system. There's that push for continuing education. Same way it works in medical, same way it works in legal. There is continuing education credits that are mandatory. And I don't feel like we have that. And so I commend those teachers who do push themselves and do try to learn the latest. But it is a problem. There's no doubt.
The cost is also a problem on the other end in terms of the software or the hardware itself might also be expensive. So is cost an inhibiting factor in many of these situations or increasingly that's not the barrier that you're seeing?
Not at all. I've built already two STEM labs and I could tell you I can knock out a STEM lab with the latest and greatest for probably under $20,000. Today, what happens is you get sucked into the idea that people come in, they got designers after designers, they're bringing in furniture from today's classroom that's a desk for like $4,000. I go, well, what are you doing? Think a little bit out of the box. You could go ahead and decorate your spaces and make them cutting edge, buying 3D wall panels. But now in terms of the actual equipment, 3D printers, you could get a Bamboo Labs A1 Mini for $250. Bamboo Labs is one of the best 3D printing companies out there today. There is no reason a school would say, I can't get this because they're too expensive. There was a major revolution in the 3D printing space that happened just a year ago, totally changed everything. And now you can print 5 times faster and the quality is 10 times better and the price is insanely reasonable. And this goes with everything. CNC machines, laser engraving machines, resin printers, if you so wish. And then computers are, Tinkercad is free. Do you know how many of these platforms that we look at today for software, they don't cost anything. They're free.
Okay, David, so let's let the audience into a secret here. What do you think the next big thing in STEM education is going to be? Where should schools be looking at if they want to try and plan out for the next 5 years or the next decade? If makerspace was the thing which schools needed to do now or 5 years ago, everyone needs to get a makerspace. Now schools need to be thinking about what in order to be ahead or with the curve in terms of education.
So fabrication is key. 3D printers is a necessity in every lab. You're going to use them for everything. So you definitely need to have 3D printers. The other thing that you need to focus on a lot, and I say a lot of it has changed over the last year, is artificial intelligence and robotics. Robotics has always been with us, but with the emergence of AI, it has changed things so dramatically that our world is, whether better or worse, I'm not saying like I love the idea, but the reality is that robotics merged with artificial intelligence is going to change the landscape in our world forever.
Give one practical example. I think we've had an episode before on artificial intelligence. We talked about ChatGPT, but in your estimation, why do you double down so greatly on artificial intelligence in educational settings?
Well, it's like the genie in the bottle. I mean, it's out, so it's not going back in. This is the fourth industrial revolution. You know, it's like the internet or fighting smartphone technology. I mean, I don't want smartphones in the school personally, but that's a separate point. but I would say that AI right now in schools, it's important for kids to be educated in what they are and more importantly, how to use them responsibly. This is where our focus has to be. You can't take kids away and say, oh, don't touch this or don't look at this. That's ridiculous. That's not going to solve anything. The idea is it's here and it's here to stay. So it's like a hammer. A hammer could be used as a weapon. It could be used to build. AI is here. And what we have to do is most importantly, kids have to be exposed to these AI tools and we have to educate them how to use them responsibly. Because if they don't learn this, they're going to get fired one day when they start using it in the wrong places or kicked out of college or kicked out of high school. So the idea is we have to educate them. We have to expose them, but we have to show them this is the right way to do it. This is the wrong way to do it. Robotics is playing a very large role in a lot of our professional everyday life. And I think that right now, my concern is that AI and robotics are going to start displacing more jobs than they are going to be replacing. So I would love to see that our kids are on the front lines of understanding these technologies so that they don't graduate and not be irrelevant to what's available in the market. That's what I think is one of the key reasons why we need AI and robotics.
Do you ever see a moment in time when AI and robotics, or the combination of AI and robotics, will transplant teachers?
I would like to think not, but I honestly would say that, look, here's the thing. A lot of people talk about AI, but one of the things they don't often talk about AI is AGI. What we know as AI today is known as the probability of X and Y. How they give you your answer is still based on this like probability algorithm, right? But it's not critical thinking. And then there's how we think, critical thinking. We're critical thinkers. But then there's AGI. And if you look at OpenAI, and if you look at Grok, and if you look at Anthropic and all these other AI platforms, every one of them are working on AGI. And every one of them will tell you it's coming out within the next 1 to 3 years. And what AGI is critical thinking artificial intelligence.
Yeah, but I do wonder here, like, in terms of education, are we always going to be playing catch up to the rest of the world? And here I'm also nervous that Jewish education is playing catch up on catch up to the rest of the education sector. And I'm wondering, is there ever an opportunity where Jewish education can actually get ahead of the curve, or at least on the tip of the curve, so that we're not always fighting for relevance when we're competing? And here's the hard reality is our education system are competing against the realities of the public and independent schools and the zip codes in which our kids live. So we need to make sure that STEM is not just an addition to our programming, but it's integral to what we're doing. Because as you said before, in order to create the citizens who are going to be part of the constructive workforce in which they're going to graduate into, they need to make sure that they are equipped to do so and not being, you know, prepared for a world which the jobs no longer exist. That's a hard mindset shift for as many places of education to undertake, but I think it's imperative that we, you know, perhaps on this series of adapting, we have to adapt accordingly and not be playing catch up all the time.
Yeah. 100%. I think education is always playing some level of catch up because you have to let the like dust settle so that you understand what the new norm is so that you can agree to it. You can't just like beta test every piece of educational model that comes out and deploy it. That's why we have beta testers, et cetera, right? And you don't want to back the wrong horse, right? But I think what's important, what you say, is playing catch up to catch up. That's the concern.
I like your discussion here about the technology. I want to remind the audience of an episode. It must be about 2 decades ago already, when one foundation in the Jewish world wanted to get ahead of the curve here and purchase for many, many schools, day schools and congregational schools, a whole lot of new, really technologically groovy whiteboards. And they put whiteboards in all these classrooms. And then before much, you know, time had transpired, people realized that they were being used as poster boards and that people didn't really know how to use the whiteboards. But we had all the great hardware, but we didn't actually know how to use the actual technology itself. We've come a long way since then, but I think it's a really important point that you're making, that sometimes you take a big bet on something which may or may not work, and sometimes it's a matter of getting the educators better trained to use the equipment, and sometimes you just make a gamble which really doesn't pay off. I've had quite a few of those where people have tried to sell me products which, like, thank goodness I didn't invest in them. And there is others where I've said, well, if only I had invested in them in the Jewish education space, where could we be today? Anything come to mind with like major surprises that have either taken off or been real busts in the education sector, in the technology realm?
I think that the back-end software is always getting better. I think that what's going to be more interesting with AI is that once you start seeing these systems being beefed up with AI, you'll be able to have a more curated and customized educational path for the student. And so you don't have things that are more generalized, but you can actually have more analysis done and much more valuable ways to try to help a student, you know, realize their full potential.
It's an interesting point. Yeah. I really don't think we've really capitalized on the capability of data and big data in Jewish education. I think you're right to point to that as being a new frontier. Can I ask you, just because I've got you on, any thoughts you have about social media and social media in schools? I know it's particularly in the news at the moment. I know it's not specifically part of the work you're doing, but you're a phone guy. So
we actually have a social media. No, it's just that social media is you know, it's a double-edged sword, obviously. I think there's a place for it. I actually have an independent study here called Social Media and Digital Journalism. And what we decided to do was get the students to partake in social media for the school. It's reviewed by the school. And we learn and we teach them the tools like social media management systems, how you bring them all in. It goes through a workflow process. It has to go and get approved. And we teach them how to use things like Canva and other kind of tools that they can use to develop and enhance their social media. So I think it's important because you're going to have these content creators, whether they're in advertising, marketing, etc. And the idea is to show them how to make, you know, quality content. I will tell you that I think that one of the problems exists is that I know from grades eighth grade and below, it tends not to be a problem. Schools are pretty like locked up on it. But in the high school area, the kids are still they're holding smartphones on their body. Teachers have to like collect them all the time from the beginning of class. It takes away from the class. They're not engaging. They're not interacting as much as they normally would have been from what I experienced when I was in high school. And I think that smartphones coupled with social media throughout the course of the school day, I don't know, I love technology, but I also hate what it does. And I see what it does to these kids and they're addicted. They're addicted. And I really think they need a break from it. And I understand that parents are all like, well, I need my kids to have a smartphone. My opinion is, I say, okay, I know voice over IP pretty well. I can make you a phone bank of a couple of phones. It doesn't cost much. Kids can use it. Parents can reach their kids. No problem. I'll take away the security concern right now. But when the kids come into school, they check their phones. They don't get them back until the end of the day. And I'm curious what would happen. The problem is, no high school will do it because at the end of the day, private Jewish education is still technically a business. And no school is going to want to be known as the school that bans smartphones.
All right. So before we get you or me into trouble here, let's leave this one for another episode because I do think, I really do think the social media applications in Jewish educational settings is becoming an increasing importance. I've said it publicly before that a similar argument, I know many Jewish summer camps have a blanket no social media policy during summer camps. And I've said publicly before that policy will come into question in the next few years when kids and parents decide not to send their kids to camp because of the ban on social media. As much as we don't want social media accounts, that's a whole other issue. But I think it's well worthy of a topic of conversation in and of itself. But David, I want to thank you because I think you're exposing here one of the key issues that I wanted to really get at the crux of today with having you on this episode of Adapting, and that is technology in general, whether it's STEM or social media, whatever it is, we have to ascertain as educators what's here and what's here to stay. And if we've deemed that something is here to stay, it's not really useful for us to put a value judgment on whether we think it's good or bad or useful or not useful. If it's here to stay, that our job as educators is actually to equip our young people especially to be able to deal with it in a responsible way and a way which can enhance them in their everyday life and as they progress to the next stages of their life. And I think, David, you've articulated that really well and really commend you on the work you're doing, especially in bringing that expertise from outside the so-called Jewish world into Jewish educational institutions. So, David, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and experience with us today. But before I let you go, I do need to ask you one question that I've asked all of our guests on Adapting, and that is, who is an educator who has inspired or transformed you?
Oh, there's actually been three of them that really, there's Kim Siegel, who works at Westchester Torah Academy. She's one of those people that we mentioned earlier that even though they weren't engineers in their professional career, this is a person who will teach themselves how to use 3D printers to stay ahead of the curve, to stay on top of things, not because they're told to do it, because they want to do it. So this is a STEM educator that has always made her mission to stay on top of the latest technology to the best of her abilities. And when she wasn't aware of something, she would learn it. She was always open to that exploration. And I was always impressed with her. I grew up with inspiration and encouragement from Rabbi Dreilich from SAR. He always believed in me, believed my creativity. And teachers like that is what, you know, gave me the ability to really believe that I can do whatever, you know, do whatever I want to do, you know, to go above and beyond and to explore the unknown. And I give all that credit to Rabbi Dreilich. And then last but not least is in the last year or so, I've had the pleasure to work side by side with Daniel Kamelhar from Westchester Day School. We've been working together and bringing their kids to the robotics competition at SIGE and just working with him and, you know, just seeing other people. And he actually is like me, who has a computer science background. So you don't get to see a lot of those guys and you find them in the wild, I guess you would say. And it's just another teacher that really just inspired me to keep doing what I do. And those are the three people that really have inspired me the most.
Well, David, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Adapting Today, and congratulations once again on your victorious robotics championship. I've learned so much from you, and I know our listeners have as well.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and thank you for having me. This is a great experience.
Today's episode was produced by Dina Nussenbaum and Miranda Lapidus. The show's executive producers are myself, Karen Cummins, and Nessa Lieben, and our show is engineered and edited, as always, by Nathan J. Vaughan of NJV Media. If you enjoyed Adapting Today and this season, please leave us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, or even better, share it with a friend. Share it with a board member, share it with someone involved in a school, or share it with someone who you know loves technology and loves Jewish education as well. To learn more about the Jewish Education Project, please visit us at jewishedproject.org. There you can learn more about our mission, history, and staff, the many programs and offerings that we have. As always, we are a proud partner of UJA Federation of New York. Thank you, as always, for listening today.